This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. The death toll from the massive earthquakes that have devastated Turkey and Syria is continuing to rise. At least 4,000 people killed and thousands more injured in what Turkey's government says is the worst such disaster to hit that country in decades. A Reuters correspondent, Matthew Lauritunda, reports.
Dozens of countries and international organizations are scrambling to rush in aid. Civil defense or search and rescue teams, some including dogs, are coming from places such as the U.S., U.K., Spain, Iraq, Pakistan, India, Taiwan, and Russia. Even war-torn Ukraine has said it's ready to send support to Turkey.
Reuters correspondent Matthew Lauritunda. Families in Turkey's epicenter of Monday's deadly earthquake gathered around a bonfire, desperate to stay warm in the freezing cold weather. Temperatures in some areas were expected to fall near freezing overnight, worsening conditions for people trapped under rubble or left homeless. Rain fell on Monday after snowstorms swept the country over the weekend. While international aid has poured into the country, search and rescue teams have struggled to set up shelters for survivors. Authorities in Peru say landslides triggered by steady rains swept mud, water, and rocks into several villages in the country south, killing at least 36 people. A civil defense official told Radio RPP on Monday 36 bodies had been recovered in a remote sector. Local officials have appealed for heavy machinery to be sent in to clear debris blocking nearly 2 miles of an important road. This is VOA News. Mali's military government has ordered the rights chief with the UN peacekeeping mission in the country to leave by Tuesday. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako.
Yam Ngefa Atondonko Andali is the director of the Human Rights Division of the United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, or MINUSMA. A government statement declared Andali persona non grata, or unwelcome. Several countries have accused Mali of working with Russian mercenaries to fight Islamist insurgents, but the government says it only works with official Russian instructors. Several journalists and rights groups have reported on alleged abuses committed by Russia's Wagner Group of mercenaries in Mali. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Congo's government on Monday blamed M23 rebels for an attack on a helicopter that killed a United Nations peacekeeper as hundreds in the eastern city of Goma demonstrated over spiraling insecurity in the region. A helicopter operated by the peacekeeping force came under fire on Sunday after taking off. A South African peacekeeper was killed and another one wounded. U.S. officials said Monday improvements ordered by President Joe Biden to strengthen defenses against Chinese espionage helped identify last week's spy balloon and determine that similar flights were conducted at multiple points during the previous administration of Donald Trump. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby firmly rejected Beijing's claim the U.S. violated international law by shooting down the balloon.
That's why we did it. About 6 miles off the coast inside our territorial airspace so that we could comply with international law, unlike the Chinese, who didn't comply with international law by flying it over sovereign U.S. airspace.
Kirby also told reporters on Monday the U.S. military has begun collecting debris from the balloon. Hong Kong's top court ruled full-sex reassignment surgery should not be a prerequisite for transgender people to have their gender changed on their official identity cards. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Transgender activist Henry Edward See was born a biological female, but identified himself as male.
We can finally live a dignified life in our home.
See decided not to have full sex reassignment surgery.
I can't go to the male bathroom, and it would be considered a crime of loitering if I used the female bathroom.
The court in Hong Kong ruled the government's policy was unconstitutional and imposed an unacceptably harsh burden on people who are transgender. I'm Ed Donahue.
Chilean firefighters were battling to hold back forest fires on Monday as authorities say hot and dry weather would continue this week, potentially exacerbating what is already the deadliest blazes in the country's recent history. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, February 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chino Dolfo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, search and rescue continue in Turkey after devastating earthquake kills thousands.
Given the fact that this quake struck around 4 in the morning, most people were at home asleep, and these buildings that have been their homes turned in many cases into their tombs, and the effort now is to get these people out alive.
Ukraine expresses confidence Western allies will provide jets to fight Russian forces.
Defense Minister Oleksiy Reznikov told a news conference in Kyiv on Sunday Ukraine had already received everything from its wish list to Santa, except planes.
And trial begins for Hong Kong democracy activists charged under a new national security law. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Search and rescue teams searched through tangles of twisted metal, crushed mounds of rubble and concrete to reach dozens feared trapped after a powerful 7.8 magnitude earthquake rocked wide swaths of Turkey and neighboring Syria on Monday, killing thousands of people. Authorities fear the death toll will keep climbing as aftershocks rattle the region. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said officials do not know how high the number of dead and injured will rise. For more on the race against time as thousands face the night in the cold, I spoke with VOA's Dorian Jones.
Given the fact that this quake struck around 4 in the morning, most people were at home asleep, and these buildings that have been their homes turned in many cases into their tombs. And the effort now is to get these people out alive. Now, they are struggling against the elements. The region is in the grip of a very severe winter. As we speak now at night, temperatures are plummeted below zero. Freezing rain along with snow brings with it the risk of hypothermia for anyone that is trapped in these buildings, and even for the wider population, that many of them have lost their homes and now on the streets trying to survive these brutal, brutal conditions. But as we speak now, it's still very much a search and rescue operation, and that's why Turkey's appealing for international help from across the region to help in this massive task that they are facing. We're talking about 10 major cities in Turkey that have been badly affected. 13 million people have been affected by this very powerful quake, one of the most powerful quakes to have struck Turkey in a century.
Talking about international help, a lot of countries have sent condolences and have promised to send both material and men, experts, to come in and assist. How is that going?
From the onset of this devastating quake, Turkey, within a matter of hours, made an appeal for international support. It's underlined just how severe this crisis is. And they are getting response from neighboring Greece, rescue teams that are believed to be on the way, bringing with them very important sniffer dogs. Now, these dogs are really crucial in finding anyone alive. They have a very sophisticated sense of smell that can find living people. And Turkey is in urgent need of them. They have some themselves, but given the fact that we're talking about thousands of collapsed buildings, such help, such specialized help, is vital. Also, there are offers of assistance from Israel, also from the United States. Even Ukraine, which in the midst of fighting a war against Russia, has offered assistance, as too has Russia. In fact, Russia, first planes of assistance have arrived in Turkey, reportedly. But the big problem is getting these people to the region, because this region has been very badly affected by the quakes. Infrastructure, roads, many roads have been destroyed, and a number of the airports have been very badly affected. One is currently out of action. So getting this aid, whether it's from Turkey or internationally into the region, is a major challenge. And we're hearing reports from all across the region saying that no help has yet arrived. So that this is a priority, whether it's from abroad or domestically, is getting people on the ground into that area. And currently there is a major mobilization, but it's taking time. And time is something that the rescue operation doesn't really have.
President Erdogan fears that the debt toll would climb significantly.
The quake that struck Turkey was in the region of even greater than the 1999 earthquake that hit just outside Istanbul that claimed around 17,000 lives. And in this region, it's been hit by two powerful earthquakes, one following a matter of hours after the other, which is a very rare event, but has happened before. And this has caused a massive amount of destruction, not only in one city, we're talking about 10 cities that have been hit by this powerful earthquake, and that's 13 million people. And given the fact that the images that we've seen are so much devastation in so many cities, so many collapsed buildings, Turkey is bracing itself for possibly the worst earthquake in the Republic's history.
That's VOA's Dorian Jones speaking with us from Istanbul. Officials in Ukraine say Russian forces are keeping Ukrainian troops tied down with attacks in the eastern Donbas region. Moscow is thought to be assembling additional combat power there for an expected offensive in the coming weeks. This as Ukraine's defense minister is confident Western allies will agree to the country's latest weapons request, warplanes to fight off Russian forces that invaded nearly a year ago. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Defense Minister Oleksiy Reznikov told a news conference in Kyiv on Sunday Ukraine had already received everything from its wish list to Santa, except planes. He adds, there will be planes too, the question being, what kind exactly? Consider this mission is already completed. So far, Ukraine has won support from Baltic nations and Poland in its quest to obtain Western fighter jets. But several Western leaders have expressed concern that providing warplanes could provoke the Kremlin and draw their countries deeper into the conflict. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Debris recovery operations went into high gear in the United States after a suspected Chinese spy balloon was shut down Saturday. VOA's Veronica Barderas-Inglesias explains how the craft remains could help answer questions about its purpose and shape a new face of U.S.-Chinese relations.
From afar, it looked like a straightforward operation. A U.S. jet approached what authorities have described as a Chinese surveillance craft and shot it down. The debris field was about 11 kilometers long. Careful planning took place before the measure was taken. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg spoke to CNN's State of the Union.
I do know that when the president gave the order to have this handled, the military gauged the different risks and the different benefits of different approaches. So the operation took place without any damage or injury to any American lives or property.
In a statement, China protested the balloon's destruction, emphasizing its claims that it was only gathering meteorological information. But elements within the Chinese military could have intentionally used the balloon to disrupt the planned weekend visit by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to Beijing, said retired U.S. Navy Admiral Mike Mullen on ABC.
I think strategically, this really damages a relationship between us and China. One of the questions is whether the right hand knew what the left hand was doing inside China.
Now, pressure is mounting on the Biden administration to recover the debris and answer questions about the balloon's capabilities and purpose. On NBC's Meet the Press, Republican Representative Mike Turner echoed critics' sentiments that the Biden administration should have downed the balloon sooner.
China is a self-declared adversary. They are clearly expanding their military capabilities. They're tripling their nuclear weapons capabilities. They're fielding hypersonic weapons.
Right.
They're expanding in space.
On ABC's This Week, Republican Senator Marco Rubio expressed concern about data collection, despite the Pentagon's reassurances that it had countermeasures in place.
It went over ICBM fields, some of the most sensitive military sites we have, and then exited the southeast of the United States, seaboard of the United States and into the ocean. So there are a lot of questions that need to be answered.
Defense officials don't expect the debris recovery operation to be difficult, but don't have an estimate for how long it will take. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Veronica. And the trial of 16 Hong Kong democracy activists charged under a new national security law imposed by Beijing began on Monday with security tied for a case that some observers say will be a test of the city's judicial independence. Matthew Laratonda of Reuters reports.
The trial has begun for 16 democracy activists in Hong Kong, now 2 years after they were arrested under the changes to China's national security laws that triggered large and sometimes violent protests in the city. This is Chan Po Ying, the wife of one of the defendants. She's also the chair of the League of Social Democrats. The defendants are accused of conspiracy to commit subversion, for participating in an unofficial political primary election for the city assembly, the Legislative Council. They may face life in prison.
For the League of the Social Democrats and many Hong Kong people, it never would have occurred to them that participating in the primaries and participating in the Legislative Council in a peaceful manner would be considered illegal. We think this is political repression.
Chan's husband is former lawmaker Leung Kwok Hung, also known as Long Hair. He and the 15 other defendants are the ones who pleaded not guilty out of 47 arrested in a dawn raid in January 2021. 13 were released on bail, but the others have remained in custody pending trial. Prosecutors say the unofficial political primary was part of a vicious plot to subvert the local government and bring what they called mutual destruction to it by taking control of the assembly. 4 of the 47 arrested will testify against the 16 now on trial. It's expected to last 90 days.
That's Matthew Laratunde of Reuters. Some 120,000 ethnic Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh have been cut off from the rest of the world for over 50 days and are now facing a humanitarian crisis. Arus Hobokyan has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
For more than 7 weeks, about 120,000 ethnic Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh have had no access to the outside world. Since December 12th, the only route in or out, known as the Lachin Corridor, has been closed. Hasmek Muradyan was displaced with her young child from the Hadrut region of Nagorno-Karabakh as a result of the 2020 war.
The last time I bought something was with a coupon. Oil, buckwheat, rice, sugar. I bake bread on the stove since there is no gas either.
Most of the region, inhabited exclusively by ethnic Armenians, came under Azerbaijan's control after a month-long war in 2020. Since then, Azerbaijan has obstructed free movement through the Lachin Corridor from time to time. But starting December 12th, a group of Azerbaijani civilians, describing themselves as eco-activists, blocked the road and effectively stopped any attempts by Russian peacekeepers to end the blockade. In talks with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, Azerbaijan's President Ilham Aliyev insisted the road remains open. But Blinken urged Aliyev to reopen the Lachin Corridor, emphasizing the risk of a humanitarian crisis in the area. And the State Department says the situation is stalling any hopes of an enduring peace between Azerbaijan and Armenia. On January 19th, the European Parliament adopted a resolution calling on Azerbaijan to immediately reopen the Lachin Corridor. But currently, the blockade continues. Schools and kindergartens have been closed since December 18th because there is no gas to heat the rooms. The Red Cross is working to transfer critically ill patients from Nagorno-Karabakh to Armenia. Meanwhile, food and medical supplies are running short. For the 120,000 residents in the region in need of the basic necessities, many are wondering when the blockage will end. For Arus Hakaban in Nagorno-Karabakh, Annie Rice, VOA News.
In other news, a Kenyan court has rejected an offer by Meta, the parent company of Facebook, to stop a case accusing it of exploitation and poor working conditions. Meta argued that the Employment and Labor Relations Court did not have jurisdiction in the case since it is not based in or does any trade in Kenya. The French news agency AFP says the suit was filed by a former content moderator at Samar, a company contracted by Meta to review Facebook posts. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Mali's military government has ordered a rights chief with the UN peacekeeping mission in the country to leave by Tuesday. Annie Risenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
Mali's military government ordered the UN peacekeeping mission's human rights chief on Sunday to leave the country within 48 hours. Guillaume Ngefa Atondonko Andali is the director of the Human Rights Division of the United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, or MINUSMA. A government statement read on state TV station ORTM by presenter Ibrahim Traoré and later posted to the station's Facebook page declared Andali persona non grata, or unwelcome.
Cette mesure fait suite aux agissements déstabilisateurs et subversifs.
He says this measure follows the destabilizing and subversive actions of Mr. Andali in flagrant violation of the principles and obligations that must be observed by United Nations officials. The statement said Andali was biased in his selection of witnesses testifying at the UN Security Council. Malian activist Aminata Sheikh Diko at a January 27 Security Council meeting accused Mali's government of working with Russian military partners who committed rights abuses. The Malian government statement did not mention Diko by name, but accused Andali of selecting usurpers to speak to the council. Several countries have accused Mali of working with Russian mercenaries to fight Islamist insurgents, but the government says it only works with official Russian instructors. Several journalists and rights groups have reported on alleged abuses committed by Russia's Wagner Group of mercenaries in Mali. The UN peacekeeping mission, MINUSMA, did not immediately comment on the announced expulsion and does not have a spokesperson in Mali. Mali in July expelled MINUSMA's spokesperson Olivier Salgado after he tweeted about the arrival of Ivorian troops as support for a UN contingent. Mali's military government said the 46 troops were mercenaries, detained them for 7 months, and in December sentenced them to 20 years in prison for conspiring against the government. Three female troops released in September were sentenced to death in absentia. The government finally released them all in January under threat of sanctions by the Economic Community of West African States. Separately, Mali's Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced Sunday that Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, would be visiting Mali today and Tuesday. French troops helped Mali in 2013 after Islamists took over the north of the country, but withdrew their forces last year over concerns about Mali working with Russian mercenaries. Mali's military overthrew the government in August 2020 after popular protests over its failure to stop the insurgents. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Thank you, Annie. And U.S. educators are debating the merits and risks of a new free artificial intelligence tool called ChatGPT, which students are using to write passable high school essays. So far, there isn't a reliable way to catch cheating. Matt Dibble has the story.
Since its release in 2022, an artificial intelligence-powered writing tool called ChatGPT has won instant acclaim, but has also raised concerns, especially on school campuses. High school student Galvin Ficus demonstrated how entering a short command can generate a summary of Jane Eyre, a book she was assigned to read.
I think it did a pretty good job, honestly.
Some teachers, like Lou Paulette Taylor, are concerned the freely available tool could be used by students to do their homework for them and undermine learning.
The critical thinking that we all need as human beings and the creativity, and also the benefit of having done something yourself and saying, I did that.
Across the U.S., school systems are choosing to restrict access to ChatGPT on their computers and networks. Developed by San Francisco-based OpenAI, ChatGPT is trained on a vast amount of language data from the Internet. When prompted, the AI generates a response using the most likely sequence of words, creating original text that mimics human thought.
There's no what we call a source document, right, or a smoking gun to look to say, yes, this looks like it was lifted from that.
Annie Cecchitelli is chief product officer for Turnitin, an academic integrity service used by educators in 140 countries. Turnitin's anti-plagiarism software checks the authenticity of a student paper by scanning the internet for possible matches. But when AI writes text, each line is novel and unique, making it hard to detect cheating. There is, however, one distinguishing feature of AI writing. Turnitin's ChatGPT detector is due out later this year. Wang says keeping up with AI tools will be an ongoing challenge that will transform education.
A lot of things that we hold as norms and a status quo are going to have to shift.
AI may become acceptable for some uses in the classroom, just as calculators eventually did. Teacher Steve Wright was impressed when his student used ChatGPT to create a study guide for her calculus class.
You know, if ChatGPT can make us, like, throw up our hands and say, like, no longer can I ask a student to regurgitate a process, but now I'm going to have to actually dig in and watch them think to know if they're learning. That's fantastic.
In schools and elsewhere, it seems clear that AI will have a role in writing the future. Matt Dibble for VOA News, Oakland, California.
Stay tuned every Wednesday and Friday at 9 p.m. UTC time with your pilot, Roger Moon, to listen to the RM Show, where you can respond to our question of the week, get some entertainment news, and enjoy some great music. It's all happening at VOA Africa. God bless. Peace, Africa.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinonofo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a recent meeting, Secretary of State Antony Blinken and British Foreign Secretary James Cleverly reaffirmed their support to Ukraine as it defends itself from Russia's brutal attacks. Secretary Blinken applauded the UK's commitment to send Challenger 2 tanks and additional artillery systems to Ukraine, elements that will continue to reinforce and add to what the United States has provided. "We remain united in strengthening our humanitarian assistance to the Ukrainian people," said Secretary Blinken. "To prevent greater humanitarian catastrophe, the United States has joined in applying economic pressure through sanctions and export controls on Moscow designed to deprive Russia of the resources it needs to keep fueling its war machine. We're undertaking these efforts and more to put Ukraine in the strongest possible position when a negotiating table emerges, so that there can be a just and durable peace," said Secretary Blinken. With regard to Iran, the United States stands with the British government in condemning Iran's execution of Iranian-British dual national Alireza Akbari, which was politically motivated and unjust. "It fits a pattern of abuse by the regime, detentions, torture, forced confessions, unjust executions," said Secretary Blinken.
"We'll continue to work with the United Kingdom and our other allies and partners to hold Iran's leadership accountable for these and other abuses. We'll keep standing with the brave Iranians who are standing up for their own basic rights, led by young women, all of this in the face of extraordinary repression."
The People's Republic of China was also a topic of discussion. Secretary Blinken welcomed the United Kingdom's commitment to deepening its engagement in the Indo-Pacific. "We look forward to continuing our close consultation on a host of issues in the region, including maintaining peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait." On the subject of Northern Ireland, Secretary Blinken affirmed U.S. support for the Belfast Good Friday Agreement. "The United States believes that there must be a negotiated settlement to the implementation of the Northern Ireland Protocol that's acceptable to all sides. The United Kingdom and the European Union have recently made substantive progress towards the negotiated solution." "The United States and United Kingdom," said Secretary Blinken, "are adding another chapter to a very long history of this special relationship, at a time when it could not be more important and could not be more vibrant."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.